Hey everyone, this is Muhammad Gaddafi, aka General Gaddafi, and welcome to our latest map shot, where we will be having our faction focus on Abyssal Dwarves. So with us today, we have two esteemed guests, Nicholas Lee from Malaysia and Timothy from the US. So just to start off, we'll do an intro for both Nicholas and Timothy. Maybe I'll start with you, Nicholas.
Thanks, God. My name is Nicholas. You know, I'm based out of Penang, Malaysia, the Pearl of the Orange. I've been tabletop gaming since, early 2007, 8, something like that. And then I stepped into the Kings of War community around 2017, 18. During that time, you know, my primary army is actually the Empire of Dust, which I still hold fondly, close to my heart till today. I recently branched out into Abyssal Dwarves, fairly recently, I would say. And yeah, I've been loving it so far, gaming with all my friends locally here, and recently attended the Clash of Kings Asia Pacific. So that was a great experience. I'll elaborate a bit more on that shortly. Over to you, Timothy.
Thank you, Nick. My name is Timothy. I'm from Columbus, Georgia, in southern United States of America. I have started wargaming all the way back to 1986, where I'm dating myself here slightly. I went to a hobby store, and two elderly gentlemen, elderly to me, I realize now they're probably about my age now. But they were playing Orcs versus Dwarfs, and I had just finished reading Lord of the Rings and was just love Dwarfs. They're still my favorite fantasy race, and they were so kind to explain to me the miniatures and the rules, and from that began a love for wargaming that's never stopped.
Awesome, Tim. Just want to find out a bit more about how you got into Kings of War. I mean, how do you find out about it, and can you share with us?
Sure, absolutely. I've played Warhammer Fantasy Battles, as I discovered in the game I just mentioned from all those years ago. I think it was second edition Warhammer Fantasy Battles, if I remember correctly. I started collecting Dwarfs as my first army, then Chaos, Warriors, Dark Elves. They were first undead and later split into Vampire Counts and Tomb Kings. So I played Warhammer Fantasy Battles for years, many years, and then, as I'm sure you guys are aware, Games Workshop made, I think, a mistake, frankly, in ending that setting. They brought it back now, but Kings of War was something that some of my other friends that also played Warhammer Fantasy were like, this is a great option, and I started digging into it, and when I saw that it's, you know, a model agnostic rule set where you, if it just sort of matches the, you know, models that Mantic produces, it got me very much interested into converting my old Chaos Dwarves into Abyssal Dwarves and just getting Abyssal Dwarves because I really wanted to support Mantic, especially after playing one game and just really getting engrossed in the rules with several of my friends. The rules are so concise and awesome that, I'm definitely very much more interested in Kings of War now that I've got a little bit of experience playing it.
Awesome. So maybe we'll jump straight into the topic, the faction focus. What made you choose Abyssal Dwarves?
My favorite, I mentioned just now that the dwarves in general are my favorite fantasy race. But once you go to evil dwarves, be it chaos dwarves, gray dwarves in Dungeons & Dragons, Forgotten Realms, that's just that little bit extra, you know, of coolness factor to me. The spiky armor, it gets me every time. And the, you know, the Chaos Dwarfs with their particular lore is just absolutely fantastic. And the Abyssal Dwarfs, as I started reading into them, and Nicholas, feel free to jump in here. The idea that any dwarf could become an Abyssal Dwarf, if I'm understanding it correctly, because they sort of fall to the temptation of greed, it seems. They reach a certain level where they abandon their clan or their dwarfish morality to embrace the darkness, and then they just kind of become an Abyssal Dwarf.
Yep, absolutely. And I think that, you know, typically when you think of dwarves, right, you have this idea, you know, or the concepts of diligence, industriousness, you know, mm-hmm. stubbornness, generally, you know, these qualities that would be classified as, you know, good things. But then you twist it and use it for, you know, evil means. To me, that's a very good subversion, you know, of this kind of trope, which I really find very interesting. And yeah, in the Mantic verse, it is said that, you know, rumored that, you know, because of their proximity to the Abyss, you know, Abyssal Dwarfs cannot reproduce naturally. And their ranks are swelled by traitors, as you call it, you know, from the other Dwarven clans. So that is a pretty interesting take on, you know, this aspect.
Right. And that is very interesting to me because if they can't reproduce, which I'm hoping that's not hard lore at this point, because if they can't reproduce at all, it makes me think at some point there just wouldn't be any left, because how many dwarves turn from their clans to join the baddies, if you don't mind me putting it that way. but yeah, this just the idea that as you mentioned, this is a version of the dwarfish trope that we all know from fantasy. They care about honor, duty, the clan, you know, that get gruff dwarf industriousness. We're going to make armor and weapons and live under the mountains. And the Abyssal Dwarfs are just a nice twist on that, that it's taken to a certain extreme where they love gold and precious metals and jewels. And they, you know, they don't care anything about stabbing someone in the back to get ahead, which is, you know, as you know, from dwarfish lore, that's just completely anathema to how dwarfs would react.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah. I think the Abyssal Dwarfs in Panator, I think they're quite distinct from the old Chaos Dwarfs of old. Yeah, and they also have an interesting lore tie-in with the Redkin and also the Orcs. Like, they have Redkin slaves, they have Orc slaves. So maybe you guys can chime in a bit about that, the aspect, having slaves and whatnot.
Yeah, certainly, you know, I probably would like to talk a bit more on this, because, you know, being like, they only have really two major cities, you know, at the Age of the Abyss. Well, currently there's a third one being slowly built up in after the events of recent books. But in those two cities, right, it is described that these cities like tower over the mountains or hills surrounding the area. They go tall, they go deep, and there's a lot of, you know, industry going on, as well as daily sacrifices, you know, to the abyssal wicked ones. Seriously, you know, you read the books, right? They have this like bridge that goes out over the Edge of the Abyss, and they're like daily sacrifices being pushed over the edge down to hell itself. So they describe, you know, how different types of races speak for different slaves and how they are using them. So, for example, dwarves, like fellow dwarven slaves, are commonly used for hard labor. Elves make amusing playthings. Orcs make for great warriors, and so on. And I think that the creation of the Redkin in the lore represents some of those mistakes where, you know, this sounds like a good idea at first, but it sort of backfired, and now look at where they are. Tim, have you had a chance to go through this part of Abyssal Dwarf lore?
Yes, and I love it, because you can see that their hubris has gotten the better of them at times, specifically with the Ratkins. And based off the Clash of Kings 2024, the actual detachment, I think it's something called Rebellion. It's something like it's the orcs that are slaves, but it sounds like they're about to do a orc slave rebellion. At least that's what it seems to be hinting at anyways.
Yeah, the Brewing Rebellion, you know, Ox Spartacus or something.
Yes, that's it, yes. So you can see that their hubris, you know, is going to get them. But in terms of to answer Gad's question about them being slavers, these are evil dwarves, and if they don't care anything about, you know, killing or backstabbing their own kind, I mean, it just, frankly, just following the logic there, if we throw morality out the window, if you care so little for your own kind, then why wouldn't you see other races as just a resource to be exploited and used?
Correct. The quotas must be met, you know, the profits must be reaped, regardless
exactly.
of cost.
Yeah. I mean, we're not throwing ourselves over the abyss and into the hell. I mean, that's what these people are for.
That's awesome, man. So yeah, I think that gives our listeners a good insight into the lore. I think if you want to find out more, Mantic has a free PDF of the Panator lore. I think that goes into quite detail for each faction, including the Abyssal Dwarves. And I think there's some the resources out there. There is a wiki on the Mantic lore, and also, I hope there should be a novel coming out for the Abyssal Dwarves. They have been for the Dwarves, so probably that's in the works. Will be interesting to see, like from their point of view.
Right. I won't give spoilers, because I personally hate spoilers. But there is a book called Pride of a King. That's the first of a trilogy, a dwarf trilogy. And not to give spoilers, but you do see one abyssal dwarf. And it's very strongly hinted, I'll just leave it at that, that you're going to see more of them. And I'll just leave it there. But I am very giddy with excitement, honestly, to read novels featuring the abyssal dwarves.
Yeah, cool. Yeah,
I have piqued my interest, Tim. I should get a copy of that soon.
It's actually an excellent book, to be honest. Yeah. It's excellent.
Yes, I heard reviews. I haven't read it yet. But Pride of the King, I think, just out recently by Wing Hussa Publishing. So check that out if you're a fan of dwarves and Benetton. So, so moving on from the lore. So maybe we'll just go through for yourself and for Nick. Maybe you can choose a favorite infantry unit that you like and just tell us more why you like it. Is it the lore? Is it the model? Is it the rules? And so on.
For myself, I'm always going to be a sucker for the elite infantry. I've got 2 degrees in history. So anytime they get to the elite troops or the elite shock troops, like the Varangian Guard for the old Byzantium Empire, but for the Abyssal Dwarves, give me the Immortal Guard every day of the week, twice on Sunday. Absolutely love them.
Coincidentally, that is also my favorite unit. You know, lore-wise, they possess one thing that differentiates them from other dwarves, other abyssal dwarves, in the sense that they are actually loyal. So this is something of an aberration in their society. And I think that lore-wise, this makes them stand out. You know, you get some really loyal troops to your overmaster, you know, that can support you and, you know, act as a spearhead on a needed anchor. Game-wise, I'm also a sucker for tough, unmovable walls that can grind the enemy to dust. So this goes right up my alley.
I completely agree with you. The immortal, like you said, the fluff of them being loyal, and then conversely, the armor they're in, eventually it turns them almost into like mobile suits of armor.
Yep.
Where they sort of lose their personality. So it's ironic that a good virtue of being loyal actually in their society when you're in the Immortal Guard, it kind of works against you.
So. Punished for it, you know.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I didn't exactly. If I'm an abyssal dwarf, I'm not sure if my goal is to be a living suit of armor, but you know, hey.
Yeah, I think in game wise, they're pretty good. They have regen, they are fearless. You don't have to worry about waivers, you know, because they are. They're so loyal and committed to the cause that they don't waver. And now they have ordered march, which I think it's a very fitting rule for dwarves where they can give them a bit of movement. And now you can take crushing one. I think what's the rule called, Nick, that gives you crushing one?
Infernal Wardens or something along those lines. That's a very good upgrade.
That's it exactly. Infernal Wardens.
So you have the Immortal Guard and you have the elite of the elite Immortal Guard who are the Infernal Wardens, which is like super cool.
Love it. It's like Nick said, this hard crushing wall of angry dwarf steel axes and hammers coming right at you, and they're not going to waver. Your only chance is to break them if you can. So.
Yes.
It's very cool. So moving on, what about cavalry? I think cavalry, we don't have a lot of options. I think, what do you like about the abyssal half-breeds or the grotesques? Which one do you guys prefer?
For myself, it's the half-breeds. If I'm playing evil dwarves, I want to play evil dwarves. This is where Nick actually, in private conversation, helped me out when I listened to the other podcast that had a lot of negative things to say about abyssals. But the abyssal half-breeds are just, come on. The top half is a angry dwarf that just wants to kill you. The rest of it's like a bull. I mean, come on now. Thunderous charge, regen, fury, crushing strength. I mean, it's got everything you want in a cavalry unit with an army that just struggles for speed. It's the only setback to the abyssal dwarfs is their speed. And so here you get a fast-moving hammer unit. I love them personally.
I think you missed out on one more cavalry unit, which is the Slave Orc Gore Riders.
True. I mean, they are the slaves. Nobody really cares about them. But yeah, they can be quite in the formation. They have been. I think they have a lot of potential in the formation because of the rally that they can get.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Maybe you want to share more about it. Yeah. personally, I think what Tim has correctly identified, you know, the speed is always a premium in an Abyssal Dwarf list. So among all three, right, you have the Shock Cavalry, you know, of the what do you call it, the Abyssal Half-Wits. But I don't think that the Grotesques are actually working for me at the moment. Maybe it's a player skill issue at this point. I'm not that familiar with them yet. I quite like the Half-Wits because lore-wise, you know, a mutated fusion kind of, you know, a body horror experiment always comes up. And then game-wise, I've been using them with some fair success, like, you know, charging a certain nautical hero and overrunning into the flanks of a Giga unit, you know, so that's always fun.
Sorry, guys. I mean, yeah, he actually killed Hector with his half-breeds. I don't know how, but it happened. So, yeah, I think they are really underrated. I really like them. They are a cool unit, and I mean, I have no idea why a dwarf would want to be mutated into with a bull, you know. Do you know the story behind that, Nick or Tim?
Well, you're assuming that they actually have a choice.
That's what I was thinking. I think these are just experiments that they just organize into regiments. I think the champion is the only one that seems to have true intelligence, if I remember correctly.
Yep. Some sort of bloodlusted Frankenstein monsters, you can put it that way.
Right. And they're just useful enough to keep around as an actual military unit.
Very cool. I think for myself, I like the Grotesque. The Grotesque, I like that Mantic has taken a different view. I mean, they didn't go down the Bull Centaur, which is just a bigger version of the Abyssal Hybrid. So they have a different kind of abomination for the Grotesque, and I think they are different enough from the half-breeds. They are slower, they are tougher, they hit a bit harder with Brutal and TC2. So that's what I think they have a role to play, but as you said, Nick, it's not for everyone. I think speed 7 is tricky. It's not fast, but it's not exactly slow. So I think they're a cool unit, and I like the models for it. What do you guys think?
I agree with you. Sorry, Nick, if you want to continue.
Thanks, Tim. Yeah, the models do look cool, you know. Flesh-crafted horrors infused by the powers of hell itself. So that's always an awesome factor in that sense. And then the half-breed champion, you know, I like the way that they go with this tri-lick, tripod kind of look, right? So it is really different, you know, from other monstrosities out there. I think it works out really, really well. Sorry, Tim, over to you.
No, I agree with you with that completely. And to go with what Gad was saying earlier, one of the things that, if I can just take a moment to address the Mantic line for the Abyssal Dwarves, is you have, if you just want to play classic, essentially evil dwarves, you can do that. And the models look fantastic, by the way. I truly love the way the models look. But the fact that they have things that are just so off the wall and original, like Grotesque, the Obsidian Golems, I mean, the fact that you have evil evil Earth Elementals working for you. I don't think anyone that I know of in any sort of fantasy setting has that other than the Mantic Vessel Dwarves. I think that's really cool. You also have the Gargoyles, like the minor flying demons to help you out. That's also original to Mantic. I love it. I actually love that you have such a variety that if you really want Abyssal Half-Breeds, you can run them. Or if you want to run a Grotesque, you can run a Grotesque.
True. Very well spoken. And the Golems even have guns, you know. You can give them guns. What's cooler than that?
Oh, exactly. Guns.
Cool. So moving on. I mean, all these units are fine and dandy, but you need heroes to lead your army. So maybe you can each share what hero you like, a bit about the background, and yeah, why you like it, why you like them.
There's quite a lot to choose from. From my point of view, all heroes are great in the Abyssal Dwarf list. You know, flavor wise as well as gameplay wise. It's very hard for me to make a pick, you know, but if I were to absolutely have to narrow it down, my favorite is probably the half-breed champion. Right? The guy is a bit stick, fast in a list that struggles with speed. He puts out the pain, you know, he's decently tanky. And then, you know, lore-wise for me, he is a killing machine that has enough intelligence to know what to charge, where to charge, and what to kill. What about you, Tim?
I want to second the health free champion for myself, but I also have to give a lot of love. This would be my 1A. If the health free champion is our 1A for myself, it'd have to be the Overmaster, the humble Overmaster. He actually hits pretty hard. He's got inspiring. And the mighty keyword, I found out that that actually helped me out in the game. So, yes.
Very cool. And I think for the Heartbeat Champion, they have a hero version, which is Baki Baka. And he's like the most elite, best Heartbeat Champion. And his rules reflect that. He has the Badoom rule, which is it very inspiring, and the dread being 9 inches.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. Did you know anything about his lore?
Yes. So Mr. Baka is actually a leader of entire Temple Bastions. So Temple Bastions are these like mini districts within each Abyssal Dwarf city. So Badoom actually is the name of his legion. And I think he sort of rules around with a sort of extreme Darth Vader style. disagree me or fail me, and then you pay with your life kind of thing. So efficiency is always high in his Temple Bastion.
He's also awesome, a beat dick as well.
Yeah, definitely. He does practice this sort of inverse decimation. So if, let's say, if one slave falters in his quota, 10 more, he and 10 more others will be killed as an example to the rest. So that's how he motivates his workforce,
I'm Brandon Rossbond of Winged Hussar Publishing, and you're listening to the Mantic Universe Podcast.
The Mantic Universe Podcast. So much universe and so little time.
Cool. So yeah, for myself, I actually like the Abyssal Grotesque champion. So he's been recently been given a bit of a boost. The difference between him and the unit that he hits on 3+, which is you don't see a lot of 3+ in the Abyssal Dwarf list. So being mobile, nimble, hitting on 3+, he has high enough nerf, he has regen. So he's quite a interesting unit to use, I would say, for he can fit in the gaps, get flanks. Yeah, I think he's a cool unit to use.
That's an excellent job.
Yep. So moving on to the monstrous stuff. I mean, I went through that monster. So maybe you guys have a monster you like.
Nick, would you like to go? Sure.
My personal favorite is actually the Greater Obsidian Golem. Big G himself. So this is one of those lava obsidian creations, by the Abyssal Dwarfs. So they experiment with, flesh horrors. They also use magic to, conjure up automatons to work for them. And one of the mightiest is the Greater Obsidian Golem, towering stone lava construct. I personally like him because he looks cool. And then, gameplay-wise, he is a very valid search target with a very high defense. So worst case, I can throw him into the front to just knock something. And he's also pretty dangerous if he gets magicked into your opponent's flanks. What about you, Tim? Any favorite of yours?
This is partly due to just how awesome I think the model looks. The Hellfane. I absolutely love the model. It's a gorgeous model. Since I love playing, as I mentioned before, the evil dwarfs as much as I can, the Hellfane boosts your units with all of these different aura abilities that it's frankly, if you're going to play like myself, I think mostly a dwarf, an abyssal dwarf list, I think the Hellfane, I'm not going to call it necessary, but it's such a boost. Plus, again, the awesome model. So, yes, I'm going to go with the Hellfane.
Very cool. Yes, I think monsters-wise, I actually like the Supreme Ironcaster on Wing Halfbreed monster. That big dude, the Titan, the Flying Titan guy. So there's the caster on it, and also there's the
Overmaster version, right?
Overmaster on it, yes. So both are good. I mean, the regen helps. It flies. It provides threat. As you said, in the Abyssal Dwarf list, speed is not easy to find. So having that kind of big dragon, and he has regen, and now Yes, Fury, right, I believe. Yeah, Yes, Fury. Yeah, so it's a pretty cool monster. And I mean, who doesn't like a big flying dragon, especially in Mr. Dwarf? You know, you don't expect it. So if you want, you could run a force with cavalry, flyers, you know, and people are like, wow, this dwarf list is not a dwarf list. It's pretty fast.
Yeah, if I can ask a question, is the new guy here, looking at the Overmaster on the Ancient Winged Halfbreed or the Supreme Ironcaster on the same mount, the Overmaster, if you look at the stats on it, I mean, it's just an almost supreme beat stick, frankly. So if you had to pick between the two, what are the pros and cons?
I think, yeah, go ahead, guys.
Yeah, so that's a great question because they're quite distinct enough. But they both have different roles. I think the Overmaster is more like a traditional dragon. You try to get flanks. You try to hit people in the flank, do some damage. And he can take a bit of punishment with 17, 19 nerf and regen. The Supreme Ironcaster, I think he's more of a support piece that can also fight. Because he has the ability where he can, I think, cast two spells a turn. Certain spells. So yeah, so it really depends on the makeup of your army, but both are extremely viable, I would say. What are your thoughts about it, Nick?
Yeah, the Overmaster is a, like we mentioned, a traditional beat stick. You should not be charging to the front if at all possible, because with only 9 attacks, yes, they do hit hard. However, he does not have the volume to actually, you know, practice in a single go. You should try to threaten flanks whenever possible. This is a pure combat unit. Regen, Fury will make sure that he can continue to contribute, you know, every turn. The Supreme Ironcaster, on the other hand, yes, at base value, it is, you know, slightly cheaper, but if you buy in the stealth and whatnot, it could quickly add up. Now, this is a support piece, mainly because of the poorer melee value, the lower number of attacks, and also it has abilities like Radiance of Life. There's nothing more frustrating than your opponents hitting your tanks, you know, your defense 5 regen immortal guards or your wall of golems, and then you just fly near them and, you know, heal everybody back up again. You know, it's more of a support piece. And I think if you really want to contribute to combat, using Fireball, because it has Aria Fool's Flame, maybe with some artifacts as well to boost the Fireball count, that could also work well. I would not throw this in combat unless absolutely necessary. Think of it as a very tall spellcaster that has mobility to support your battle line. That's my take on it.
Yeah, but it's still crushing strength 3 with 8 attacks, so and be vicious. So if you can get a flank, I would say I'll go for it. You know, I am a aggressive player, so I'll go for it because it comes with Fireball 12, which is a lot. At being height 6, you could see over almost everybody.
Anything. So
Yeah.
Could shoot without cover. And Fireball 12 can be painful. And what's the rule for the flame? Is it elite for the Fireball?
Vicious for Fireball.
Ah, vicious for Fireball. Okay. Cool. And yeah, you could get up to Fireball 15. And if you can get can you give it the diadem?
Yes, you can.
So you could get Fireball 12 plus 6 plus 3. So Fireball 21 in theory.
I like the sound of it.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't like to roll 31 dice for Fireball, you know? You could give it Elite, and you get Elite and Vicious for your Fireball, which is awesome. And you can get it works for your combat as well. So that's something you can consider. It can get expensive once you add up all the different abilities and items, but it's a cool unit. It's 16, 18 nerf. It inspires. So its Radiance works on itself as well. So that's always good.
If I could just say, I also think in terms of the modeling aspect of it, I actually have this model. It's a centerpiece model. Same thing for me with the Hellfane. It looks so great on the tabletop.
Awesome.
It does. I have one as well. It draws your eye to it. That's all I can say. It's really, really great. Kudos to Mantic. Yeah.
Yes. So cool. So that we went through a couple of the units. I think we shared a bit about the formation. I think formation is pretty cool. Do you guys like the formation?
I like the previous year's formation better because it fit more of my theme of, you know, evil dwarfs. But the Brewing Rebellion, I'm not sure it's something that I would use. I'm actually curious what Nick would say as the experienced player. Do you think it's worth it? I mean, it's pretty hefty in its point cost.
It is hefty. It does, however, bring speed to your list. You know, if you are, you know, you're lacking in that aspect. The hero itself, Jack Bloodspike, being the Orc Gladiator, that is a contender, you know, for an equivalent to your half-breed champion. I believe there is a UK list that brought this, and Baki Baka together with three other abyssal champions for,
yes,
for five cavalry beatstick heroes that can move around. That's a fairly interesting to see. But I think personally, I wouldn't go for it because it's not my style. I do not prefer like full cav armies or like majority cav armies. I'm more of a foot slogging infantry kind of guy. So yeah, that's my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I think the hero is pretty awesome because he gives Aura Wild Charge 2, which works on himself too. So any aura that you infer on others, you also get the benefits from. So he's charging 18. So he out-threats other cavalry. He has Brutal, he's 7 attacks, CS2, Thunderous 1, very inspiring. So it's a pretty good, it gives you that option if you want to go cavalry heavy. So Tim, you mentioned about the old formation. I think it's still there in a way. You can still take the Infernox and give elite to all infantry, not any unit in the formation. So they kind of retain the formation, but added something else. It gives you a bit more flexibility, I would say.
Nice. Actually, in my 2,000-point list, I have the Infernox. I actually was curious to ask your guys' opinion, if you don't mind, on the Hexcaster. I've been told it is an almost essential unit to take in the list. I'm just curious what makes it such a essential part of your Abyssal Dwarf list.
I personally did not bring it primarily because I don't have a model for it at the time. Yeah.
Now you have. I actually I just saw Nick the Hexcaster from the Dungeon Saga board game.
Nice.
So he has one. He has no excuses. So maybe you can share about how you're gonna use it.
I think primarily I will use it for the weakness debuff, so to speak. Abyssal Dwarfs are generally already fairly tanky. So if you take away the ability of the enemy to deal damage to you, you know, that would increase the survivability of your front line, allowing you to, you know, flank where, you know, mess up their battle lines. It's cheap for what it does, and, you know, it has this ability to deal damage to whatever enemy it casts a debuff on. So I think a couple of Hexcasters can even work as a very, you know, sort of tertiary unit to ping off wounded units, you know, late in the game, assuming they survive. It itself is also resistant, you know, to magic. And I think that does help if, let's say, you're facing an army of lightning bolts, for example.
Cool. So, nice. Yeah, thanks for that, Nick. So maybe just towards the tail end of the podcast, we will just go into the army playing style. So maybe, Nick, you can share a bit more, because let's go through your army and how you actually piloted it to 4-0 for Clash of Kings Asia, which was in January.
Thanks, Scott. So my army is primarily an infantry-focused Abyssal Dwarf list. I think that sort of bucks the trend a bit, because for most people, when they think of Abyssal Dwarfs, it's my mighty war engines, or maybe, you know, my golems or whatnot. But I've decided to just bring good old-fashioned dwarf grit to the battle. And what I did was, you pasted the list, right?
This is mine. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No worries. Okay. So what I did was, I had to consider, am I facing a melee heavy or shooty? I mean, because Abyssal Dwarf infantry, right, being very slow, most of the time, you know, you will get outcharged. So I had to take things like, you know, Berserkers with Ensnare upgrade. Now, this would cause the opponent to overcommit in melee if they want to take out the Berserkers. However, if I'm facing a shooty army, then, you know, the Immortal Guards would actually lead the charge. Being defense 5, regen, and fearless, I can count on them, you know, not wavering. In fact, my entire battle line is fearless, made up of Berserkers and Immortal Guard. The only non-fearless units are the one regiment of Decimators, just for a bit of shooting support. And I also included two regiments of Halfbreeds for that speed, two units of Gargoyles, you know, for chaff. Supporting this infantry line is your Overmaster with the Strider Aura and Wings of Honey Mace. together with the Infernox, with the Elite upgrade. So having Vicious and Elite is chef's kiss, man. Especially if you buff them with Benchan, you know, from the Iron Caster. Those things can just chew through, you know, whatever opposition they may face. Now, because I don't have any War Machines, it's a very aggressive list. This is at 2,000 points. If I go to 2.3, then, you know, I will include Tim's favorite unit, you know, a Hellfane, with all those auras that would buff, you know, an infantry line.
Excellent.
How has your experience been, Tim?
Yeah.
Yes, I love his list. It's like, do you want a Distraction Corner effects? What if I put four units of Distraction Corner effects on the table? Because it's... You're going to have to deal with either the Immortals or the Berserkers. And when, if you're dealing with one, here comes the rest. Hey, my whole army's almost fearless. Waver, what's that?
Exactly.
Yeah, so Tim, maybe you can go just brief us about your list, about how you want to play your list. So not so much about the units, but how you can envision, because it's only going to be your second game when you actually play this. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yes, sure. I'm following Nick's example. Apparently, I've got my Immortal Guard. I've got Evil Dwarfs out in the ears with some Abyssal Half-Breeds for movement. I do have the Hellfane. I love that model, and it does boost everything else in the army. The Infernox, the Hexcaster's in there, and Overmaster's in there with Elite, the Wings of Honeymaze. So I've got two regiments of Decimators. So I can have some kind of shooting. I guess depending on the scenario, it can definitely take and hold an objective. I'm a little concerned. This is like my all comers list that I've worked out. That if certain scenarios, like I can't remember the name of it, I think it's called Loot, where you grab something and you want to run off the table with it. I think, is that the one I'm thinking of? If not, I know there's a scenario that has that, where you grab something and you run off of the table with it. The lack of speed there might be a hindrance, but yes, Nick and I have pretty much the same thoughts about what we want to see in the list.
Yeah, so I believe we have a few scenarios that are focused on the loot tokens that would be push and loot as well, and also plunder. So you don't have to run away with the tokens, you just have to hold the tokens. Yeah, I think for push, you can get more victory points for the tokens on the opposing half of the board. So I think for the good thing about Abyssal Dwarves is the units are all speed, a lot of them are speed 4 or 5. So even if you get a token, you don't actually have a disadvantage in terms of speed. Like other armies, if you're speed 6, with the token, you're speed 5. You know, but for Abyssal Dwarves, they are slow anyway. So they don't actually get a disadvantage for holding tokens. So by getting the tokens to the other side might be a challenge. That's for sure.
I also want to add something here, right? Because when you grab a loot token, you lose nimble. But because Abyssal Dwarves have all that much which are not nimble, so you can actually have pseudo nimble while still holding the token.
The Grotesque are almost the only unit that has nimble, if I remember correctly off the top of my head.
Yes, and Gargoyles. Yeah, I think
Gargoyles, these are the two. The shaft.
And also the Overmaster and the Ancient Wing upgrade well. Yeah, but if you're getting him to get tokens, unless it's at the end of the game, you're probably doing it wrong.
That's true. Actually, one of my friends is going to be playing Northern Alliance against me quite a lot, and he's discovered already that if he wants to freeze all of my units and discovered that it doesn't affect your movement if you're 4 inches or below. So he was like, are you kidding me? I said, sorry. Oh, no. You can't make the slowest army in the game, tied with dwarves, go even slower.
Yeah, so frozen or not, they were still march on at speed 4. Yeah, so you can't stop them. They are relentless. I think with one word I would describe the Abyssal Dwarves is relentless. I think especially Nick's army, your army, you know, lots of fearless units. So relentless would be a word I used to describe. What about you guys? What would you describe the army as?
Very painful for the opponent. It's like call an ambulance, but for you kind of thing. Because the entire army has vicious, right? So almost every unit has vicious in one form or another, either from range or in shooting, or like the hell in the case of the Hellfane, both. So even vicious in fireball. So this kind of stuff, right, really, really puts out the wounds. It's very unlikely to have no casualties or when fighting against abyssal dwarfs. So I like the ability to quickly take out key enemy units, and I try to, you know, the dream is to whatever obstacle you throw in my way, I will crush it and I'll move on and I will crush him.
I love that confidence. Yes.
Cool. So yeah, thanks both of you for hopping on. Any last thoughts before we finish the pod?
I would say thank you guys, both of you, for as a new player, especially giving me more confidence to play this army. When I listened to the other podcast and their review, they were just so down on the army. And then thankfully the 2024 update, giving ordered march and boosting some of the units. I can already see, I've played one official game, but I have tested a lot of units in different scenarios with my wife. And I can definitely see the difference that ordered march has made. If you don't mind my guys asking, especially Nick, since you're a veteran player, can you go into detail about how much ordered march has helped the list, has helped the Abyssal Dwarf faction?
Substantially, I would say. You know, I've used it to win games before by, you know, ordered marching my way out of, you know, the line of sight of a crucial charge. I've used it to, you know, get into certain areas or zones or even in certain positions that will make it disadvantageous, you know, for the enemy to charge. I've used it to set up charges, you know, one turn earlier. I've even used it to, in a game against one of my opponents here, to bait and switch, not something that you will see in a dwarf army would do. I basically moved my entire right flank into my center over the course of like two turns and in the correct facing. So that's something that you can't do previously. That would take about three turns minimum, you know, if you do not have all that much.
So now we can do refuse flank tactics for those out there who are familiar with old military terminology and tactics. But yes, I love a good refuse flank, Nick. Congratulations, by the way, for going 4-0 with the Abyssal Dwarfs in the tournament. Hats off to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dave. You know, it's suddenly, you know, it boosts the enjoyment of the army, and I hope that, you know, in your games, you know, you would enjoy it as much as I do. And feel free to reach out to us, you know, and let us know, you know, how did it went.
Will do. Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for inviting me, and thank you for the knowledge. I cannot wait personally to exploit the weaker wastes of Panathor with my vicious Abyssal Dwarfs.
That's the spirit, Tim. That's the thanks, Nick and Tim, for joining us. So I hope you guys enjoyed the map shot, Faction Focus on Abyssal Dwarfs. If you guys have any comments, suggestions, ideas, please feel free to chime in. So until next time, this is Gut signing out. Thank you and goodbye.